present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Thank you. Hello and welcome back to another Tournament of the Mind. We start off with this eye-catching headline from the Times Higher Education Supplement.
French model to replace A-levels.
Good idea. And that scholarly find came from Richard Sullivan of Chippenham. Time now to meet our panel of four familiar British models. Traipsing down the catwalk on my right are the Observer's Simon Hoggart and his team captain, Richard Ingram. And on my left, Clive Anderson and Alan Corran. And bringing up the rear is Brian Perkins, and with this court report from the Ampt Hill and Flitwick Herald and Post.
Women's Institute members had a date with royalty at this year's National AGM, for one of the two speakers was Her Majesty the Queen. Following speeches from the Queen and agony aunt Claire Rayner, WI members voted to ban the use of bovine somatotropin.
And that good news was brought to us by David Cox of Hurlington. On to the first question, which, as usual, is for Richard Ingrams. Richard, who's not resigned to a European welcome?
Well, I usually say it's either Archbishop Runcie or Prince Charles. I might be wrong in this instance.
But the answer lies somewhere between the two.
We have to look for another lunatic. I think... I think possibly the answer may be... Mr. Adolf Riddler. He was invited to dinner with the Queen Mother. let slip a number of very private remarks about how he didn't like the German race, and they should all be strung up, including Herr Kohl. And it all got out into the Spectator. There was a tremendous row, whereupon he retracted every single word. The whole issue was retracted. Yes. I don't think that's ever been done before.
Quite right.
String him up.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Richard. It's all about the government's Minister for Rough Trade and Industry. Herr Nicholas Ridley, a sort of Edwina Curry without the tact. Interviewed in his Berchtesgaden bunker by Dominic Lawson, he described European commissioners as unelected reject politicians. Well, he at least speaks as an elected one. Apparently, the future former Secretary of Trade and Industry, it's there if you look for it, believes that has just two unfair advantages, trade and industry. Simon, can you tell us about a major investigation of minor discrepancies?
Yes, you're right about Edwina. She got into trouble, didn't she, saying that we'd had to send back a lot of Japanese condoms because they were far too small. I read this and I thought, she's absolutely right, because I used to buy them when I was a young lad, and I used to have to wear two. But that's not the answer to your question, is it? It's the Arthur Scargill case. Turns out that Arthur had been cooking the books, so he's going off to be deputy president of the Soviet Union. because Gorbachev is looking for one, and it's going to be Arthur Scargill. That's the story, I think.
More or less, yes. This all concerns the coal workers' legendary bottomless pit, or as you know it, the Scargill account, and more than £1 million sent by the Soviet Union to Dublin and Paris, which appears to have gone by the pretty route. Mr. Scargill claims that the money had to be kept hidden to avoid sequestration and that a sock under his bed was as good a place as anywhere. Now an inquiry update with this prison report from The Guardian.
The authorities at Dartmoor were well prepared for a disturbance in D Wing on Saturday, April the 7th. It started 10 minutes late as prisoners were watching the end of the Grand National on television.
And the concerned Partha Goswami of Edinburgh sent that our way. Clive Anderson, your first question. How can the English expect more of a sporting chance on the continent?
Oh, this is clearly a reference to English football clubs being allowed back into Europe. So they've got a reasonable chance of winning it. Can that be right?
That's absolutely right.
That's a bit dull, isn't it, that answer? But any more? Do you want any more jokes about the World Cup?
Could have got a Ridley joke in. I'd say could have got a Ridley joke in there.
Go on,
well,
then,
Alan. Well, I wouldn't dream of doing it. I mean, I would...
And then there's the Ridley joke that Alan is about to say.
No, I haven't got a Ridley joke.
The question arises, which has occurred to both us geniuses, will Ridley be allowed back into Europe after that?
Alan Corran, your first question, preceded by this clueful progressive rock number.
Shut the door.
Ah, but they're coming through the window.
Well, shut the window.
Well, now they're coming through the door.
Well, shut the door.
Yes, but now they're coming through the window. Oh, the room is full of wool all anymore.
And that was, of course, shut the door, they're coming through the window. And Alan, your question is, which embassy opened the doors and put out the no vacancies sign?
Well, this is Albania. I've just been thrown by the shut the door, they're coming through the window thing. It wasn't the same tune that I used to whistle.
Well, no, it wasn't.
When they said stand in the corridor, the headmaster will be in a minute. I didn't know there were variations.
That was the Albanian version.
That was the Albanian
version. Personal clue for you.
Everyone wants to leave Albania. And they are banging on the doors of various embassies and climbing over the walls and,
apparently Nicholas Ridley's going there though.
Nicholas Ridley is fighting in the hills with the Albanian partisans. He and Tito's leg will strike back at the soft underbelly of coal. The only asylum Ridley is going to get is one we all know too well because it's a very old joke. And it's one Nicholas Ridley joke we're not going to make.
Right. And the question refers to the former population of Albania, which went flat hunting and moved into the West German embassy. Described in the local property rag as desirable residents within handy reach of the immigration desk, 3,000 up, 3,000 down. Apparently all 6,000 Albanians tricked their way in past the receptionist by claiming they'd just come to read the meter. And unsurprisingly, the score at the end of the first round are for all, as always. Back to you, Richard, for your second question. How was a master judged to have misjudged? Happy hunting ground for you, I'd have thought, this question.
This chap May, who's been looking into these poor people called Maguire, who were put in prison for the wrong, because they had nasty stains on their fingers or didn't. And now the judge in the case, Lord Donaldson, has been quite rightly ticked off. So he says he won't do it again. He'll try not to do it again. If it's likely to happen again, the silly old fool.
Ooh!
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that with a lawyer present on the other hand.
No wonder you get so many judgments against you, Richard.
Sorry, I was
drawn. The question refers to the case of the Maguire family, who in 1976 were charged, tried and convicted of being Irish. We would point out, however, that Lord Donaldson is and was a very good judge. Yeah. And we've got forensic evidence to prove it. Simon, who's unlikely to boast, Ich bin ein Trevor?
I'm what?
Ich bin ein Trevor.
Ein Trevor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
They know on the other side.
All the Germans think all the British are called Trevor. They're the only ones they ever meet. They see these people with décolleté backsides.
Ridley.
Seeping over their jeans belts. This is what's upset Ridley, really. It's probably Nicholas Trevor Ridley, did we bump him? And all those girls are called Tracy.
Sorry, it wasn't a survey. I think that's the comical reference, isn't it?
Well, my learned friend says it was a survey.
Because English people are apparently the worst lovers to have on a holiday romance. And we're all called Trevor, apparently.
Their love is so inadequate as to be unrecognisable by the Germans. Who will probably turn it into a verb. I have been trevored. That's what they were saying. wasn't quite like anything else, but I have been regularly trevored by these.
Getrevored. There's a strange anti-Germanic bias coming out of you here. I think you've been talking to Nicholas Ridley too much.
Awfully sorry about that.
This does all refer to a European beach flirting guide published by the German Bild newspaper, which described the English holiday Romeo as Das Trevor, who suspends passion killer shorts from a beer gut, speaks only in English, and is mean with money. They could be describing Americans, really, if it wasn't for the bit about them speaking English. However, might as well be rude about everybody as we're doing it. And we take a short break now for this ad from the Shropshire Star.
For sale, Rottweiler, bitch, lovely temperament, reluctant to let go.
Well, thank you to Alice Scrivener Shrewsbury for that. Clive, your question will be along in a moment, but first, see if you can stay awake through this musical treat. There's a lot to say about that.
Exactly. Oh, I think there is. That's nice to hear Pavarotti again after that. Nobody sleeps in that, do they? I can imagine.
No, right.
Bilingual joke for you.
The title was, you'll be surprised to learn, Train Long Suffering. It was by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. And your question is, whose slogans become, this is the age of the barefaced lie?
I think this is something to do with British Rail being picked out for having advertising that you can't really believe, and they have it away day specials aren't up to much and things like that. And I don't know why British Rail should be singled out for this criticism, because no advertising really reflects what things are like. And if advertising were to be honest, then they wouldn't be paid such a lot to think up their silly slogans and stories. So this is unfair to British Rail, and I drove here. So.
Yes, it's all about British Rail's television advertisement produced by Saatchi & Saatchi, the agency already responsible for turning general elections into a blue saver day. Seasoned commuters claim that the films are not, in fact, sepia-toned. Carriages always look that colour through the window. Alan, your question now. Can you tell us the horrors haunting Hill House?
I think this is Eric Morgan. What? Who has wild staring eyes, and he stares at dogs. He runs a dog's home. He's an RSPCA man. And he stares into the dog's eyes until they become mad, because according to the people who shopped him to the RSPCA, he takes pleasure in putting the dogs down. But he first has to prove them mad, so he stares at them until they go barmy.
Absolutely wrong.
Wrong? How could anything that ridiculous be wrong?
Well, there was a Hill House who played for Holland in the World Cup. I don't want to keep on about it.
Started
with a G, but he was called Hill House.
It was wrong. Can I ask the question again?
Is the Hill House... dirty schoolmaster who was on Esther Ransom's show?
I think this is
Esther
one about
Ransom
Prince Charles.
Well, isn't
it? Yeah. The prep school boys of Hill House School all got food poisoning on the same day.
That's right.
But I can't see why there should be any concern of ours.
There was something on their cucumbers that gave it to them, apparently.
What?
It was something on their cucumbers.
Oh, I see, yes. I wonder what you're saying for a moment.
If they had a small boy there some years ago, talked to the cucumbers and said, your day will come. 20 years later, they struck.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. In every particular, Hill House is, of course, the character-building Knightsbridge prep school that once boasted the infant Prince Charles and now keeps rather quieter about the unfortunate case of food poisoning. According to their regular ambulance driver, 87 children were stricken with convulsions, abdominal pains and nausea when the head teacher sat the older infants down and explained the core curriculum to them. And now another question for the young and strapping Richard Ingrams. Richard, which doctor has chosen to take a political powder?
It's the famous Dr. Death, I think.
Yes.
As he is popularly known.
That's right.
Otherwise known as Dr. David Owen. And he's finally decided that there's nothing much more to be got out of being the leader of a political party with only himself as the only member. So he's looking for jobs now. I don't know what he can do.
Probably work for the Observer, everybody else thinks.
Well, I've had this vacancy at this RSPCA place for a madman with staring eyes.
Well, I've got that one.
No, Richard's already got the job. Simon Hoggart, we go across the waters for your next question in more ways than one. But first, see if this musical item provides any clues. Well, that music was called There's a Rat in My Kitchen, UB40. And the question is, who was the first lady to be crossed by a rat lately?
It must be a story about a rat.
Almost certainly. Almost certainly a rat.
Years of experience on the show. And the first lady is always, it turns out to be, if it's not Nancy Reagan, it's Barbara Bush.
Right, you're quite right there.
She had a rat in her swimming pool.
But this was weeks ago when the rat came and they asked George Bush what he was going to do about it. It was this rat competing with his wife, this rat in a spandex bathing costume with fire. He said, what are you going to do? And he said, well, I'm going to wait and figure out what I find I'm comfortable with doing. And then sort of 18 weeks later, after consulting Gorbachev and Mrs. Thatcher, they send in someone to kill the rat. With a... How it's, I mean, that's obviously something to do with it.
Awfully good. Yes, you get your prize for that. It's all the stirring tale of fearless pioneering American President George Bush, who threw off his wimp image and killed a White House rat who joined Barbara Bush in the pool. Oliver North's next of kin have been informed. Time to move our coverage to another superpower with this analysis overheard on Sunday's The World This Weekend on Radio 4.
Mr. Gorbachev has got a second wind. He's just come back from lunch.
Now, thanks to the eagerly admiring King of London for that. Clive Anderson, your question. Who found parking is such sweet sorrow? Parking story.
Yes, I've worked that out. I know what it is. I've remembered this. This is some poor chap employed at Harrods to, he says, open doors for people and to keep Tiny Roland from coming and things like that. And he, a customer...
Richard and I would like that to be removed. Yes. very quickly, or else writs will be issued.
Yes. This poor chap was either parking a customer's car or moving his own car or something like that, and he crashed a Rolls into a Bentley into a Sinclair C5 or something like that, and he got sacked. And that's then he sued them for his job back, and they probably said he had to have his job back because he hadn't been warned 3 times not to crash cars outside. And there he is. So bear in mind, always travel by train to Harrods. You know it makes sense.
Yes, quite right. Your question now, Alan. Who's doubled their interests in Brazil lately?
This is not football.
No, it's this fact-finding tour question.
I know.
You know what this is?
Yes.
Oh, shoot.
It's something like one team of MPs went off to do a fact-finding tour of Brazil, and when they got there, the first group they bumped into was another group of MPs looking for the same facts. And because everyone's chopped all the trees down there, then there's nothing else to find except each other. And they came back and reported on each other, and that's the story, which Alan deep down knew all along. Mm-hmm. That's the first story you've never read in our entire 25 years of news quiz.
And it was ecologically sound. I like that stuff about the trees.
Yes, I thought I'd get that in there.
Quite right. When you two have finished your loving, let me tell you what it's like. It all concerns two rival parties of fact-finding freeloaders, one of civil servants, the other of MPs, who were double-booked on identical junkets up the Amazon. Without realising it, they actually sat next to each other on the outward plane trip. At the end of round 3, the scores are Richard and Simon 11, but Alan and Clive still in the lead with 13. As a prelude to round 4, we turn to the front page of the Exeter Express and Echo.
Jonathan Pitts of Manston Crescent was given 18 months probation by Ayr Sheriff Court yesterday for exposing himself during self-denial week.
And the shameless Christina Sachs of Exeter posted that one to us. The final one for you, Richard, in South Africa, how did the breakdown in communications interrupt a newsworthy and reverential affair?
Well, my partner was convinced this was a reference to somebody called Gaza, who I never heard of.
No, nothing to do with anybody called Gaza.
Well, this, I think, is a reference to poor old Alan Buzak, who is an anti-apartheid campaigner, who was having a bit on the other side. It's rather unfair, actually, because there's another man in America you read about, who is an 81-year-old Baptist minister.
We've got that coming up. Don't tell us about it. Oh, you have to treat them like children. Yeah. Now then.
No, I thought it was rather inappropriate to bring him up. Richard, why should poor old Buzak have to chuck it in? And this dirty old Baptist in America.
No, we're doing the Baptist.
Is he allowed to have 27 wives?
No!
Doesn't seem
now
fair.
Now you've blown the big surprise question
all
of
right,
the day.
All right, get on with it. Anyway, the references to poor old Buzak.
There's a little item listeners may have missed on the South African News at 10 when newscaster Colin Flaxman burst into tears reading a report concerning the adultery of his own wife, who'd been having an affair with Dr. Alan Buzak, a leading campaigner against apartheid and against the Seventh Commandment. anyway, Simon, barely changing the subject.
Baptist coming up.
Right.
You can be sure.
Which Baptist minister... They do it by instinct somehow. Which Baptist ministers married more women?
This Baptist minister. I believe, I may be wrong, and you'll correct me if I am, Barry, yes. He was 81 years old. Yes. He's been married to Anna Ford, and when she had to announce the news on television, of course she absolutely broke down in tears. He's actually American. He said, get another of these randy clerics that they have there. There are a lot of them. I mean, there's that fellow Swaggart, who used to take prostitutes to a motel
yes,
in New Orleans.
Yes, we don't need to go to all that.
It's a kind of motel that's so sleazy that you had to phone room service to have the Gideon Bible sent up. Anyway, this 81-year-old Baptist minister who had 97 wives and many of them being married to South African newsreaders, and that's the story.
Yes, that's the 81-year-old, very emotional and probably very tired, Reverend Glyn Scotty Wolfe, who is an appropriate name, not Scotty, of course, but Wolfe, who is divorcing his 27th wife in order to marry number 28, her 15-year-old sister. Clive, your final question. Which minister's putting his energies into Lord knows what underwater?
Something tells me if it's not Nicholas Ridley, it has to be the other joke figure, Cecil Parkinson. Putting his energies underwater,
right.
That can't be a reference to the Channel Tunnel. No. That's not energy, that's just a hole in the ground.
It's
is this
much,
anything
much
to do
older.
With water?
I'm just captivated by the idea of what Cecil Parkinson doesn't know from a hole in the ground, but I... And I can't go on.
I pass
Simon.
It to Simon Hoggart here.
It's the Titanic.
Right.
Oh, quite. Well, they finally decided that it's time that we had an inquiry. Apparently the ship went down. Nothing's been seen of it for some time. Hasn't arrived in New York yet. And we all... Something pretty rum amiss. And we're going to check it out. This is the kind of government we have. Also, Ken Clark is going to conduct an investigation into the Black Death. And if we made it wait another 100 years, they might even look at Lockerbie.
It's all concerned, you're absolutely right. It's all concerned Cecil Parkinson, the safest minister ever built. Secretary of State for Empty Vessels, who wants to clear the name of Stanley Lord and open an inquiry into the Titanic. Stanley Lord presumably being the captain of the Titanic. Would that be right? Would that be
no, he's the captain of the Californian.
What? Well, who is Stanley Lord?
He's the name of the iceberg.
He was the chap who was supposed to have come to the rescue of the Titanic. And he was blamed because they said he should have seen the flares going up. Oh. And he said, well, he couldn't have seen the flares because he was miles and miles away. And now they're going to clear his name. I think Lord Donaldson is going to be called.
And Lord Grade is going to make a film about it. The Dorman at Harrods actually crashed into the Titanic.
Yes, you always think, I just opened a door and
it's filled
up with water.
He's kept his job because apparently it was on its way to Harvey Nichols, so it was all right.
And finally, Alan.
What?
Where can the... Where can the stars of Marine World pass their twilight years?
Oh, it isn't the world's largest turkey.
No, it isn't the world's largest turkey.
Turkey Federation has bowed to animal rights protesters against the plan to build the world's largest turkey. It's going to be 186 pounds and it's going to hobble around this Christmas for a bit and then they're going to kill it. I know what this is. This is all the old dolphins. In the Caribbean, a rest home is being built for old dolphins and Titanics and Ridleys and newspaper varieties, and they can sit and chat with one another.
The dolphin is supposed to be much smarter than human beings, isn't it? Several dolphins in the audience already asked that question in front of me. it is about a bide-a-wee home for elderly dolphins who can sit around and say, why haven't they dug the Titanic up yet?
I hope the next series they book four dolphins instead. Anyway, this is all about Flipper's retirement home currently being built in the Turks and Caicos Islands by the Aga Khan and Flipper's trainer, Rick O'Barry. Before I reveal the final scores, can I ask the team to read us to sleep from anything interesting they may have brought with them this week? Richard, have you brought something?
More bad taste from Canada. It's just a headline in the Edmonton Journal. Dead pilot had difficulty flying plane.
Well done. Simon.
This is an advert from the bookseller. Commissioning editors required, starting salary up to £14,000, involved in the commissioning and management of a range of Bibles and related publications. You will enjoy close author contact.
Have you got one or more?
I've got one or more. One is from the Staines Informer, and the story reads...
Yes, all right. Use radar.
That's what it's called. I can't help it. I've, and this is called, oddly enough, the headline, which is not the bit I was going to read, called Sticky Moment, as a stuntman falls to earth. But the story from the Staines Informer is a death leap stunt at Saturday's Feltham Carnival had crowds gasping in terror when the fearless stuntman landed heavily on his cardboard crash pad. Heroic Herman plunged 75 foot from a specially built tower. He was set alight before the leap, watched by a crowd of hundreds of carnival goers. He risked life and limb to raise money for Ashford Hospital's intensive care units. Alan.
This is from the Melbourne Age, Barry.
Right.
The annual Warranura race ended in confusion last Friday after the disqualification of the winner, trucker Brian Stevenson. In this traditional event, contestants are required to cycle the mile-long course through the township with a 4.5-gallon keg of beer balanced on their heads, the winner keeping the keg. After Stevenson had crossed the finishing line, a suspicious steward examined the keg and found that it was empty. I drank it behind the garage before the start, confessed Stevenson. I knew I was going to win anyway, and I thought I'd save everybody a lot of hassle. Stevenson was disqualified, but was allowed to enter a game when the race was rerun. He won again, but was subsequently charged with being drunk in charge of a bicycle. And again disqualified. The title went to his wife, who came in second.
Wonderful. Now it's time for you to give the final scores, which are amazingly a reversal, because Alan and Clive have scored a noble 16, but Richard and Simon are this week's winners with 17. Well, and I'll ask Brian Perkins to see us off with this delightful tale from the Hello magazine.
In an incredible tale of survival, a lost 5-year-old girl spent 3 near-freezing nights in a Canadian mountain wilderness. Carrie Savitskoff was found after a search by 6 rescue teams, 2 helicopters, tracking dogs, infrared cameras, a police plane, a diving team, and hundreds of volunteers. Carrie later told her frantic parents that she had heard the rescue teams but didn't call out because she'd been told never to talk to strangers.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingram, Simon Hoggart, Clive Anderson and Alan Corran. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The program was written by John Langdon and the producer, Amanda Iannucci.